Chapter 40. A little over an hour later, I sat on my horse outside my house. The moonlight shone on the puddles of a deserted Chancery Lane. The horses were nervous at being out at such an unaccustomed hour. I was tired and my injured arm ached. Sir Thomas Seymour had gone to his house in the Strand to make ready for the journey to Hertfordshire. As Chancery Lane was en route, he had agreed that I should leave a message for Tamsin and Joan that we wouldn't be back until late in the day. I'd asked Barrack if he wanted to write his own note for Tamsin, but he had shaken his head. The sound of jangling harnesses approached from the direction of the Strand. A crowd of over a dozen men, all wearing swords, rode quietly up to me. The moon cast a pale light over them. A tall man in his 30s was in the lead, Harsnett and Barrack beside him. The men accompanying them were all young, strong-looking, some with an air of suppressed excitement about them. All were dressed in sober, dark clothes. I realised Sir Thomas wasn't there.
"Ready?" Harsnett asked.
"Yes."
He nodded to the tall man.
"This is Edgar Russell, Sir Thomas's steward."
I nodded at the man who bowed briefly in the saddle. I was glad to see that he had a serious, authoritative look about him. Barrack looked at the blank windows of my house.
"Everyone asleep?" he asked.
"I've left a note. I said you were sorry you wouldn't see Tamsin until tomorrow."
"Thanks."
"Where's Sir Thomas?" Barrack smiled.
"He's gone to fetch Dean Benson out of his bed and bring him up to Hertfordshire. He'll join us there."
"Why?"
"So he can identify Goddard for certain, if we find him."
Barrack's horse Suki pawed at the ground. Barrack looked at me, full of suppressed excitement.
"Ready?"
"Aye."
"All right, girl,"
Barrack said to the horse, then turned to the steward.
"Come on, then. Let's go and catch this arsehole."
"There is no need to swear," Harsnett told him reprovingly.
"Arsehole isn't swearing. Swearing is taking the name of God in vain."
Some of the men in the entourage laughed. Russell turned in his saddle.
"Quiet there," he hissed,
and the noise subsided. I was glad to see the steward seemed to have these men under control.
"We must go on now, if we're to get there before dawn," he said to me.
I nodded. We rode up Chancery Lane, the horses' hooves and the jingling of their harnesses sounding loud in the still night. "What happens when we arrive at Kynesworth?" I asked Harsnett.
"There's an inn just outside the village we'll use as a base. The innkeeper's a godly man and a friend of Master Goodridge, the magistrate. We'll set men in the woods that surround Goddard's house before dawn and go in and take him when the sun comes up."
He leaned in closer.
"The steward Russell is a good man. He has these men under close authority. He was in Hungary with Sir Thomas. He knows warfare. It was he insisted all the men wore dark clothes to attract less attention."
We rode on through the dark and silent roads. No sound but disturbed birds, the cattle dim shapes in the meadows. It was monotonous, and once I almost dozed off in the saddle. It was still dark when Russell raised a hand for us to halt. We had come to a small country inn set back from the road. Lights were burning inside. We dismounted quietly.
"Magistrate Goodridge is inside," Russell said. "Coroner, Master Shardlake, come inside. Someone will take your horses. You too, Barrack," he added with a smile. "We need all the practical minds we can get."
Inside was a long, low room set with tables, which no doubt functioned as a tavern in the evenings. It made me think of Lockley and poor Mistress Bunce. A fire burned in a hearth set in the centre of the room in the old way. Its warmth was welcome after the long, cold ride. A man of around 60 was sitting at one of the tables, a hand-drawn map before him. He rose to greet us. He had a tanned, swarthy complexion and sad, penetrating eyes. An experienced and competent country magistrate, I guessed.
He introduced himself as William Goodridge.
"What is the plan?" Harsnett asked.
He bade us sit, and, indicating the map, said, "That shows the house. It's a mile out of the village. There's a lawn on all four sides. The grass is long and unkempt. Beyond that, the house is surrounded by woods."
"An ideal layout to set watchers," Russell said appreciatively.
"The house looks big," I said. "How many rooms are there?"
"About a dozen, as I recall. Old Neville Goddard was a hospitable man. I remember going to feasts and celebrations there when I was younger. But he couldn't control his drinking. His wife handled him badly, too. She was a shrew."
"Do you remember young Goddard?" I asked him. He nodded.
"A surly, sulky young man. Clever, but something, I don't know, effete about him. He had a great air of superiority for someone whose father drank himself into debt. I'm not surprised he went for a monk after Neville Goddard died rather than stay with that termagant of a mother."
"All their lands were gone by then, to creditors.
When the old woman died and Lancelot Goddard appeared again, we hoped he might do something with the house, which she had left to fall to rack and ruin. But he comes and goes, talking to nobody."
"And he arrived when, yesterday?"
"I'm not sure, but there was smoke coming from a chimney when Master Russell and I went to look last night."
"He never comes to the village.
What about church services?" "No, we're mostly reformers here. Perhaps he doesn't find our ceremonies papist enough. There's a lot of gossip about him, as you may imagine, but people here are nervous of him."
"The man we're after has a religion all of his own," I said grimly.
"You are sure he's still there now?" Harsted asked.
"Oh, yes. The man I have watching sent a message half an hour ago saying there were lights at a window."
Russell stood up.
"I hear horses. Somebody's coming."
We all turned to the door as it opened, and Sir Thomas entered with four more armed servants. Dean Benson was with him as well, wrapped up against the cold in a heavy dark coat, looking miserable and afraid. Like Russell's men, Sir Thomas's new servants were soberly dressed, but Sir Thomas himself wore a cap with a red feather, a doublet sewn with little pearls, and silk gloves. He smiled at the company.
"Well," he said, "we're all here now. The Dean here took some persuading, but he came."
He made a mock bow to Benson.
"Perhaps we can promise you some excitement."
The Dean didn't reply, but gave him an angry look. Sir Thomas laughed. He strode towards the map, studying it with professional interest. The steward explained the layout of Goddard's house. Sir Thomas thought a moment, then turned to the company.
"We shall go in as soon as it's light. We have 16 men now, a goodly number."
He looked round the room.
"Are you ready to storm this villain's citadel?"
he asked.
"Yes, Sir Thomas,"
the reply came in a chorus. Harsnett and I exchanged glances. These men didn't realize what they might be facing. The magistrate called the innkeeper and asked him to prepare some breakfast. It was only bread and cheese, but it was welcome after the long journey. As we breakfasted, a man came with a message that smoke was still coming from Goddard's chimney.
"All night?"
I asked.
"Yes, sir."
"That's strange," Russell said.
"He's waiting for us," I said quietly. After we'd eaten, there was nothing to do but wait for dawn. We all fell silent. Dean Benson sat by himself pretending to read a book that trembled in his plump hands. Some of Sir Thomas's men closed their eyes to catch a little rest while they could. Barrack too. I was too tense. I sat instead and looked out of the window. At length, the light began to change, the sky outlined in dark grey instead of black. I heard the birdsong begin. A few cheeps at first, then growing louder. Russell looked inquiringly at Sir Thomas.
He nodded and stood. Men who were awake nudged their dozing comrades. I could feel the tension rising around the room.
"Time to go in," Sir Thomas said. "Come, all of you, look at this plan."
When we were all gathered around the table, Sir Thomas pointed with a gloved hand at the rough-drawn map.
"I'll post 8 men around the house, in the woods. The rest go into the house, with me. And you, young Barrack."
He turned to where I stood, the first notice he had taken of me.
"Also you, Master Crookback. I want you to go in too. Goddard has shown great interest in you."
"Very well," I said quietly. My heart raced.
"Coroner Harstuck, come with us, but I don't want you to go into the house. Magistrate Goodridge, I would like you to lead us there. You know the way. Dean Benson, you can keep your fat little rump on this chair here."
The dean's shoulders sagged with relief. Outside, a couple of pails had been set in the yard. They were full of mud. At Russell's request, we all blackened our faces with the stuff that we might not be seen while we were watching the house. As we went outside, I heard the steward suggest to Sir Thomas that perhaps he should cover his fine clothes with a cloak. He acquiesced with a sigh, putting on a cloak fetched from the innkeeper. As I blackened my face, I saw him look at the rough material with disgust. I thought, how many men of high estate are protected from their foolishness by their servants? Sir Thomas scowled as he caught me watching him. I thought, why does he dislike me so? Perhaps I offended his ideals of what a man should be and should look like, as once I had offended the king. We set off along the country lanes as the sun rose over the fields, revealing trees dusted with the light green of new leaves. A woman passed through a cattle meadow with pails hanging from a shoulder harness, milking the fat kine that gave the village its name. Wood smoke rose from some of the poor houses dotted along the lanes, but no one was out ploughing or sowing yet. The woman stared in astonishment at the troop of armed men.
"There'll be gossip in the village soon," Barrack said.
We arrived at length at a stretch of woodland. The house was set in a little hollow in the middle. We caught a glimpse of it before descending into the trees. In the early light I saw an old manor house of white stone. A plume of smoke rose from one of the tall brick chimneys. Russell whispered to his men to move through the wood as quietly as possible. We moved slowly forward to the edge of the trees, and found ourselves looking across a stretch of long unkempt grass that had once been a lawn to the house. All the windows were shuttered. But for that thin plume of smoke from a chimney, the place looked abandoned. Ivy and streaks of green mould half covered the walls. Russell disposed his men among the trees with whispers and gestures. Around us, the birds were singing loudly. Russell's air of military efficiency and the numbers we commanded made me dare to hope that perhaps we might prevail.
"What is Goddard doing in there?" Harsnett next to me whispered.
"Whatever it is, we have him trapped now, surely," Barrack said. "We shall see before this day is out," Harsnett answered grimly.
"If we catch him, Cranmer wants him killed, doesn't he?" I asked. That was what he meant when he said the matter must be closed tonight.
"Do you think he is wrong?"
"It goes against the things I believe."
"I don't like it either. I'm a man of the law too."
He looked at me.
"But how could we bring him to trial, let out the fact that the Archbishop and the Seymours have been conducting a private hunt?
And he is an unclean creature, such as should be quietly destroyed in the dark."
I glanced over to where Sir Thomas, Russell, and Magistrate Goodridge were deep in quiet conversation.
"We are all pawns in a political game, Master Harsnett," I said with sudden feeling.
"But who moves the pieces? Some would say the king, but I say God moves his servants to his greater purposes."
God's stratagems, I said. Many people get hard use from those, Gregory.